Welcome back to The Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I'm your host, Dayton Rumbold, and you're listening to episode 130, Globetrotting and Good Talking, with Roger Kyler and Kylie Hoffman. Roger takes us on a journey throughout Africa, and him and Kylie talk about how you can improve your relationship with your driver manager. To hear more, please tune in to today's featured exchange. Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange. We are rolling in the studio today. We have Roger Kyler and Kylie Hoffman with us today. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excited to have you both. We're talking about driver dispatch relationship. But also, we're spending some time on Roger's life. He's traveled the world, really, and a photographer for over 20 years. You had your own studio, and now you work at Nussbaum, but you have a long history. You've done Mount Kilimanjaro. I have not done that. Kylie, have you done Mount Kilimanjaro?
I have not.
So, really excited to talk about this, and thank you for being here.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah. So, to start here, tell us. So Kylie, tell us a little bit about yourself, and you're a driver manager, correct?
Yep.
A little bit about what you like about being a driver manager.
Sure.
And yeah, anything else about yourself or your family?
Sure. Well, I live here in Bloomington area. I've been at Nussbaum for about a year and a half, and I'm now technically a senior driver manager, so I obtained that, which was great. I am married. I have a 3-year-old son named Nolan and got one on the way due in April. So I'll be taking a little bit of time off here in a bit, but I'll be back. And I'm not a very interesting person. I just kind of hang out with my family on the weekends. And that's about it. What do I like about being a driver manager? Honestly, I've worked in like the telephone industry for a while, customer service.
Really?
I did subrogation collections prior to this, so uninsured motorist vehicle accidents.
Was that tough?
Very, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're calling the people who were in an accident, which is already a stressful position, and then they didn't have insurance, so now they owe thousands of dollars for the other person's vehicle or medical bills, so... Did that for about 8 years.
So you can handle tough calls.
Yeah. Not always my favorite, but I can handle it.
You can handle it.
Yeah. So I did work up into management doing that. So eventually I did get off of the phones, but I'm back on the phones here. But the phone calls are just a lot different than that kind of stuff. You know, I'm not calling Roger because he owes a bill. I'm calling him because there's information I need to give him or assistance. So it's more along the helpful side of things, and that's what I prefer to do.
Yeah, so, everyone wants to be the bearer of good news.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to be the person that gives you something instead of takes something away. So
yeah,
that makes sense.
And then just getting to know the drivers as well with their families, and you learn a lot about them.
Yeah, you can really build a relationship over time. Mm-hmm. And you've had Chris Smith was your DM before Kylie.
And Anthony.
And Anthony Whitmore.
Whitmore, yep.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you said you don't have an interesting story, but everyone does have an interesting story. And that's something I would not have known about you, being able, making those calls. And you called it subrogation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah. So everyone has an interesting story. We might not have all hiked Mount Kilimanjaro. I've never done that. So, but we all have good stories. So,
Yeah.
And one on the way in April too.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. Yeah. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Roger, outside of work, could you fill us in a little bit on your journey to Nussbaum? And yeah, you can start back as far as you want. And what was that journey like? So you were a photographer, and could you fill us in a little bit?
Okay. First of all, my conversations with Kylie are always interesting. They're never boring, so they're always good.
Good.
Thanks.
So I basically shot weddings for 30 years. I had a studio, a photography studio, for 20 of those. And it was great. The photography business was really good to me. But 2020, COVID came along. Mm. And I was ready to be done with weddings. And I was ready to move on and do something different. And
yeah.
And so I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do. And my family has an excavating business, so I've driven gravel trucks, hauled gravel.
Yeah.
Off and on over the years. So, and I've had my CDL license since I was 17 because my family had a business. I was able to get the CDL at 17. And I just always kept it. You know, I always drove a truck as a backup. I never wanted to, but, you know. And so then when 2020 came along and I was ready to move on, I just started checking out over the road places, and I interviewed with Swift. And fortunately, I'm very lucky. Jared Furr hired me. Thanks,
yeah.
Jared. And I just came down here until I figured out what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I love it here. Yeah. Love the people. I love the job. You know, so I still do in my time off. What I got into photography for was the wildlife and travel. That's
sure.
That's what my true passion in life is. And so over the years, because I had my own schedule, control of my own schedule in the photography business, I was able to take the downtimes off and travel somewhere. I've spent a lot of time in Africa and Central America, China, and actually I'm heading to Borneo next month.
Yeah.
To go photograph some orangutans. But anyway.
Wow.
So the wildlife
cool.
and travel. So I'm still doing that. That's,
yeah.
You know, I still have a lot.
Never stop being a passion.
No.
For you.
No. And I've been very fortunate. So so that's kind of where I'm at. I've been 4.5 years here and take my vacations, go travel. And when I'm at home, I'm usually sitting in front of a computer editing pictures or working up stories and stuff like that. So
sure.
that's kind of where I'm at, you know.
Yeah, and we talked about how the wedding business is something that it's where the money's at.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you ran that photography studio too, and then during COVID that work dried up. How did your passion develop? What sparked that fire inside of you to say that I really like wildlife photography? What was that journey?
I just remember, so I grew up in a small rural community, and we used to ride our bicycles out to creeks or somewhere out of town, you know, and that was a time when you could just hop on your bike at 5 years old and take off and it wasn't a problem, you know. And, but I just remember the birds that I would see along the way, and I do remember that whenever I went to the zoo as a child, the gorilla exhibits were always my favorite. I mean, I remember them today. And so when I first traveled to Africa, my first trip was to go see mountain gorillas in the wild. And that was my only reason for going to Africa, was see the gorillas. So I've just always loved wildlife. And once I, you know, left the country and pursued that, it was like a disease, you know, it's a drug. I just couldn't get enough of it. And so I've been going back. And I mean, I can go sit behind a camera, and if there's, you know, in the forest, I can sit there all day and be happy, you know, and just wait for whatever comes along. So what I normally do is I usually travel somewhere to photograph something specific.
Yeah.
And then I'll go visit villages close by and whatever else is in the area, you know. But so the passion, I was in Panama a couple of years ago, and one of the hotels I stayed at, there was very wooded, you know, a lot of forest. And I found a spot around the hotel where there was a lot of bird activity. And when I wasn't out on the trails or in the parks, I would go and stand in that spot for 3 or 4 hours and just wait for the activity. And I was happy as as pie. And so the passion for the wildlife, it's just something that makes me happy.
That's cool. They say you find that passion when you're doing something that you have no concept of time. Exactly. You can just get lost in it, and you're just in this flow state of mind.
And so
it's really cool to see that you've really found that and pursued that.
And it's
worked out.
Yeah, and when I dream about, I find myself in some other country. It is truly a passion, and I'm very fortunate that I have that passion.
Yeah, it's an amazing one. So we're all from small towns. Right, we were talking about that, small towns. Then your first trip to Africa, I'm assuming, was eye-widening, that you've never done anything like that. You said that was that your first international trip? Or?
Correct. Well, Canada fishing.
Canada, so second international trip, but really overseas.
Yeah, it was life-changing.
Can you tell us, what was that like? What were some of the things that really stood out to you that you never, coming from a small town, that you had never thought about across the world?
On that first trip, it was a 3-week trip to Rwanda, Uganda, and what was the Democratic Republic of Congo at that time. I'm sorry, it was Zaire at that time. Mm-hmm. Now it's the Democratic Republic of Congo. I went there just to see the gorillas of Rwanda. That was my focus.
Yep.
And the culture and the people are what really grabbed my heart. And so seeing different cultures, meeting people from another world or third, another country. And that just, was an eye opening for me. It wasn't something I expected. I was more focused on the wildlife photography and just really didn't think much about what else I was going to experience, and it was life-changing, and so Africa, I've been to about 15 different countries over there, and I go back as much for the people as I do for the wildlife, because they've always treated me well, and when I'm there, when my feet are on the ground over there, I'm a happy person.
And are you comfortable? Like, so you started off with more organized trips, maybe going with a tour, and then you slowly started doing these solo trips.
Correct.
With yourself, right?
Yep.
So you, how are you comfortable with that?
So I did two overland tours, which were, first one was 3 weeks, the second was 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And on that 7-week one is when I did Kilimanjaro. Mm. But you basically, it was a situation where you hop on a straight truck that's set up for hauling people, and you would drive to different places, camp for the night, cook your meals on the campfire, and we would hit these different highlights, in the areas that we were traveling to. And that was great, but the thing, it was also a little confined for me. I needed more, and I remember one night we were at a campfire and at our camp, and there were some people that knew our guides that came in and spent the night with us, or spent the evening dinner with us, and at the end they walked out into the dark, and I'm like, that's what I need. I need to be, because I was confined with the group.
I
needed more. So the next trip that I took was a 3-month solo trip.
Okay. Wow.
And the best thing about it is, it's not all, it's kind of planned out, but you're not stuck with a plan.
Sure.
So if I came in the first week, found an area that I liked and wanted to spend more time there, I could do it because I was on my own schedule.
Yep.
And I know I have a hard time getting along with people, so it was difficult there. But I mean, people, I get along with people, so
good.
It's never been fearful for me, I love people, I love meeting people, so it just kind of all went together, So now people still say, Roger, are you going by yourself? And I'm like, yeah. Most of the people that know me well know that I just plan a trip, and go. And the other thing about planning is you don't have to worry about anybody else's plan. You plan the trip and you go do it. And it's, you're not balancing or juggling schedules to try to make it happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, even though you're going by yourself, you still need to do this with other people. Like, you interact with people along the way.
Correct.
You meet groups of people.
Correct.
Definitely, it's not just solo, but you're...
Right, right. Going, I'm leaving here by myself, but
yes,
I'll be with people.
You'll be with people the whole right. time. And those skills are very necessary. When Roger, I called him about doing this podcast, he said, on driver-dispatch relationship, he said, oh, I don't get along with Kylie at all. And I believed him. I was like, oh, I...
Dead this, silence. Dead silence.
I was like, this is the wrong call to make. And then he was like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that was funny.
So, yeah, he got me. Got me good. So then do you know some of the language to keep you going?
Not really. I've learned greetings. I have learned that a smile goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, and... you can usually find English-speaking people sometimes know. I know when I was in Panama, there were a lot of people I thought would probably speak English because they dealt with tourists, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. So the technology, Google Translate.
Yeah.
I learned about that. You
that
know.
Helps.
Oh, it was amazing because there was a taxi driver that I went from with the hotel to the airport. He spoke no English. Mm-hmm. I speak no Spanish. And we had a conversation the whole way with Google Translate.
No know? Way.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Know?
It's really changing. They even have stuff for that do live translate now, like earpieces and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, the technology is pretty cool.
It
sometimes.
Is.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes it's just scary.
Yeah.
Tell us about Mount Kilimanjaro and what that looked like, that trip in general.
Okay.
And you went with a friend. Correct.
Actually, I've been up there three times.
Three times,
yes.
Okay. So,
and I'll tell you how that
tell us all
unfolded.
About
okay.
that everything.
Okay, just make sure you have your finger on the pause or the mic cut button.
So. No, I'm very curious. Take as much
sure.
time as you need.
So I did bring some of my notes because I do get forgetful. But Kilimanjaro it's 19,340 foot high. Okay, 40 feet high. It's the highest it's the only freestanding mountain in the world above sea level. And it's the only way that you can get to that altitude in the world without needing technical climbing ability. Mm. And that's why so many people go up. It's a hike, it's not a climb. Mm. So it's about 50 miles. So it's, you go up and go back down, mm-hmm. 50 miles up, 50 back.
Wow.
And it takes, what they used to do, the first time that I went up, it was a 5-day hike, 3.5 up, 1.5 down. And I was on this 7-week journey from Kenya to Botswana, I think is where we ended up, through 7 countries. That wasn't part of the trip, it was an extra. Mm-hmm. And the people I had just met on the tour, there were 20 of us, talked me into going. And so I knew nothing about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about it on that trip. So you hike up slowly, and the biggest problem is altitude sickness. That's what keeps most people from making it to the top. And the people that least make it to the top are young men, because they make the first 3-day hike too fast.
Yep.
They get terribly sick, and they have to go back down, because the only thing to relieve mountain sickness is the altitude sickness is to go back down to lower altitude. And so above 15,000 feet, actually 13,000 is where if the altitude is going to affect you, it starts affecting you there. Mm-hmm. And above 15,000 on my first two trips, I was puking my brains out.
Yeah, wow.
And it feels like there's a vise on your head just squeezing from the pressure. And the funny thing is the guides, they know how to handle the hikers, and you basically bend over and sell your Buicks, and they look and see what's coming out, and then when you're done, you know, they just, if you're okay, they point you up the trail and you wipe your mouth off and keep going. And so if you're affected with that, you got to tough it out, you know, if you're going to make it to the top. Mm. So that first trip was with that group. The second trip, I talked my good friend Gary Hahn, who's also blind, in doing the tour. And so that was a great adventure, interesting adventure.
And tell us about Gary. So Gary is a magician?
He's a magician. He's run marathons. He's climbed Kilimanjaro. He's done some shark diving with me.
Wow.
And we did great whites in South Africa and Caribbean reef sharks. Mm-hmm. And he's blind. He lost his eyesight in the Marines.
Wow.
You know, and he's just never sat in the corner and, you know, pouted about what happened. He went out and did the best he could, and he's done some amazing things.
Wow. That's a story of what, not thinking what can't I do, but what can
exactly,
I do.
Exactly, exactly.
That's really
you know,
cool.
He always tells a story that, you know, when he was in the VA medical center, he had a choice. You know, there were two directions. You go over in the corner and sit and pout about the situation you're in, or you head out the door and make the best of what you have, and that's what he's done, you know. So he's very athletic, and I knew he could do this. There were a lot of obstacles I wasn't aware of, but we did make it to the top. And the interesting thing is we got about Harumbo Hut, which is the second hut. We got up there and realized that there are people that found out there was a blind man on the mountain, and they were making bets on whether
really?
He'd make it to the top.
Wow.
And my only regret is I didn't place my bets.
I knew he was going to do it.
I knew he was going to do it. So,
okay.
So that was a great trip, you know. And then
you mentioned some obstacles.
Yeah, major obstacles.
Yeah.
I remember when we started, we've been many places where he just grabs a hold of my arm and I guide him, you know, around the obstacles. And that wasn't working. In fact, at one point we both fell and he tweaked his back a little bit. And I'm like, this isn't good, you know. So, excuse me. So what happened, what I realized, I just needed to let him go and figure out how he was going to manage this mountain. Because there were some trails that were like cobblestone, you know. I mean, just very, a lot of rocks. And rather than me try to guide him, I just needed to let him figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then he figured it out, and we got on a roll, and we made it to the top.
Yeah.
It was great. Excuse me. And then the last time I did it was 2017. And I was 57 at the age, so at that age I was 57. So I was not sure how well my not-so-young body would do, but I did pretty well. Anyway, the great thing about what I did is my wife at the time talked me into going up one more time, and that's why I went. And we got up to, again, Harumbo Hut, which is the second hut, second night, and we spent an extra day. And that made all the difference in the altitude. Mm. So when I got up to 15,000, I didn't have the headaches and didn't have the vomiting. Mm. And so that was a good trip. We made it to the top. And one of the nice things about that trip is I had upgraded to some of the latest digital photography equipment. Mm. So I was able to do some really awesome landscapes and nice pictures of the mountain, you know. Mm. So it was good. It was all good. Yeah.
And doing that, so the trick to avoid the altitude sickness is to take it slow or?
Take it slow or do an extra day. Now they have tour. It's evolved a lot, and now you can do, if you have the time and the money, you can do it in 7 days. Mm-hmm. But when I first did it, it was 5 days. And the reason they did it in 5 days is to get you up and back so you weren't up there to suffer with the altitude if you're having problems with it for very long. Because you get up there, get to the Uhuru Peak, which is the highest point in Africa on land, take your pictures, and then head back down.
Okay.
And one of the coolest things is when you do get to Uhuru Peak, which is the highest point, you're standing the highest person on the whole continent of Africa.
Wow.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Wow.
And so there's I'm not sure, I didn't find out how many people, there's hundreds of people that do it every year, and there's about 4 to 7 people that die on the mountain every year.
Really? Yeah. So it is a pretty treacherous.
It can be, yes.
Mountain.
Yep. And there's several trails you can take up, you know, and you can take as long as you want if you have the budget. But some people get up there and have issues with the altitude, and it can be a death sentence, you know, if you don't get back down in time.
Yeah. Yeah. The highest I've gone is 14,000 feet, and my head was hurting a lot.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That was, you know, just Colorado. And so I can't imagine going, well, what'd you say it was?
It's 19,000. It's 10,000 below Everest.
Yes. Okay.
But yeah, once you get up about 14, 15, I mean, I just remember the first couple of trips. And I think that's the reason for vomiting was the pressure on my head. It felt like there was a vice in somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the altitude, you know.
Yeah.
Once you turn around and go back down, it starts feeling better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's very cool. And you did that pretty recently, too. You said.
Yeah, 2017. Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah. All right. Anything else about Mount Kilimanjaro? So you've done that three times.
I've done it three times. No, just, yeah, that was pretty much all my notes.
Cool.
It's an amazing, it's a beautiful mountain, snow-capped, but one of the most beautiful things is there's a mountain called Mawenzi that you basically hike around on your way up. That's actually probably the most beautiful part of the whole mountain.
Really?
Yeah. But it's a lot of people do it, so it's
Yeah, and I know the numbers like Everest. I feel like are growing every year. The amount of people that are doing these.
I was just listening to a program the other day, and I knew this was happening because I've seen things. Is they're having a problem with traffic jams?
Really?
On Everest, and the problem is there's so many people doing it. They're talking about raising the price to cut down that number. But what happens is, you know, there's only a small window of time to get from point from a higher point on the mountain to the summit and down. And what's happening is they're having these traffic jams because there's so many people there that it affects people getting up and down in time. And it becomes very dangerous and sometimes sometimes deadly, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm glad you're still here and that you're able to do those trips successfully. So if you wanted to talk about one of your favorite expeditions, photography expeditions, and then we can talk more about the trucking industry after that. But I'd be curious, when you think back, what are all those memories?
It's kind of like saying, talk about your favorite child, you know?
I mean, you like them all.
Yes, but I think probably I've had several great trips, and how I look at it is I expect the worst and hope for the best, and I'm seldom disappointed. But probably my favorite was my first 3 month solo trip. I had two big backpacks and one camera pack, and it was 3 months of my greatest concern was the next picture I was going to take, you know, and I learned how to travel on my own and met a lot of people. And that's probably was one of the favorite trips. And I photographed a lot of gorillas, wild gorillas on that trip. Went down to South Africa for the first time. And gosh, where else did I go? I think it was just that freedom of...
Yeah.
No telephones, not answers, you know. I could just go and
go at your own pace
and pretend like I was a photographer, you know. And so it was great.
Whole new world.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you meet Gary?
So I worked in Rockford as a diesel mechanic. And at the time, all my friends back home were all getting married, starting families, and that wasn't happening for me. And so I went up to Rockford. I changed jobs and went up to Rockford. And I didn't have a lot going on as far as social life. So I joined the Y, YMCA. And I had also, in my younger years, I studied karate, martial arts, for about 4 years.
What belt are you?
What did I get? Green. I actually blew out a knee when I was going for my blue. Yeah. I was a blue belt. I was going for the next level and blew out a knee, so that kind of stopped that. But anyway, so I was at the Y, and I worked nights, and so I went down to the Y during the day in the mornings, and Gary was there. He's also master in swordsmanship, Japanese swordsmanship.
Oh wow!
And he was, it's amazing.
What does he not do?
Well, yeah, that's if somebody asked me what he does, it would be easier to tell you what he doesn't do. You know, it's just very, very motivated and did a lot. You know, but anyway, so we were in the workout center, and that's where I went and did weights and rode the bike, and he was doing a sword kata for some of the people down there. And that, and at that time, I wasn't very good at meeting people. You know, I still had to learn how to approach people without, you know, I just wasn't good at it. And so, but that was something, a common goal there. He was into martial arts and I knew it. So I went up and said something to him and we started talking and got together and became good friends, and the rest is history, you know.
So was that after his time in the Marine?
Or? Yes, yeah. Okay. He was already blind when I met him. And probably the interesting thing about our relationship is Gary is, he's not my blind friend. He's my good friend happens to be blind.
Yeah.
You know, and that's never been his situation has never deterred us from doing whatever we wanted. We've always said, okay, let's go do this, figure out how to do it and do it. You know?
That's probably why it makes such a good friendship.
Yeah. So it's good.
Yeah. What does he not do?
Right. Probably, that's probably the easiest question.
Dive with sharks and wow.
Yeah. Well, and people, a lot of people would say, why, you're blind, why would you want to scuba dive? Well, when you scuba dive, you have to know your equipment. You have to be familiar with your equipment. You have to know what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of, it's a lot to accomplish for a blind person, you know. Mm-hmm. And he had to do all the requirements to pass the open water test, you know. He had audio computer to tell him his depth and different things. So it's as much, diving for me was a visual thing. But for him, it's an accomplishment.
Audio, yeah, you know? Wow.
So I got some great pictures of sharks.
Is there a place we can find these pictures? Do you have a website or?
I do. There's none of those pictures are on the website. They will be sometime soon when I have enough time at home to work on
that. Sure.
But he's got several books out. One of his first book has a picture that I took of sharks swimming by him in the Bahamas. All his books are on Amazon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing some of those adventures, and I'm sure we could dive a lot deeper.
We could go deeper.
Kylie, do you have any questions?
No pun intended.
Go deeper. Dive deep. Do you have any questions for Roger that you wanted to get to know?
I heard you were writing a book.
Yes, and that has a lot to do with Nussbaum because... something I won't get into. When I came here, I had a lot of healing to do, and so I started writing about my adventures, and I'd post some things on Facebook, and people kept saying, "Oh, you need to write a book. You need to write a book." So I was in a situation where you get done at night, and what do? You know, you got time before you go to bed. So I just started writing, and in a couple of years, I've got 29 chapters. The 30th chapter's been slow going. And once I get that done, then I got to go through the process. But if I wouldn't have been out driving by myself, I probably would have never written the book because there's too many distractions at home. So being able to get done at the end of the day and sit down and pull out my laptop and start writing, it allowed me to do that. And, and plus, remembering the stories and writing about the stories, that was part of the therapy that I needed to get my head back on straight, you know. So it's coming.
Yeah.
hopefully this coming year together. it'll be finished.
Exciting.
So
wow, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
I had no clue. So if you're interested in Roger's story or hearing more about it, you can look out for his book or look for Gary Hahn's books that are out.
Yep.
But later this year, hopefully.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. So, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And really is something that would not have happened if you didn't end up here.
Yeah. And that article there, that's actually the first, I've had a lot of stuff published before, but that's the first article where I've written the story and did the pictures as well.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jesse in marketing, she had a big part of that.
Yeah. You have a good story, and you're a good writer, too. I think I was reading what you wrote in this article, and you have a good way of putting your thoughts together.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was good.
Good. I'm glad. All right, ready to talk about some driver dispatch relationships?
Sure. Let's give Kylie some airtime here.
Get her on the mic. All right. So this is something that was brought to my attention, that it is a rough spot in the industry. Most people have a bad relationship with their driver manager or dispatch in general. I was reading reviews online of people that say, you work until you run out of hours and they don't care where you end up. Or, I truly believe that this company only cares about the freight and where it goes and when it's got to be picked up. So,
and are those from here
not
or
News
in Bomb. General?
They're just general on truckersreport.com. Mm-hmm. I was looking at some of those. So they're not from NewsBomb, but we do have bad reviews. I mean, that's just the nature, but hopefully not too many. So how do you maintain a good driver-dispatch relationship? What are the key elements to keep that thriving? How do you promote healthy communication? What's that look like?
So, Kylie, you've dealt with difficult phone calls, you know, so I don't know. You go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing for me, which is pretty obvious, is the open communication and like you have here, accurate information. I mean, if you send a driver to get a load and you have information, you know, hey, you need to go to this dock or you need to be here at this time in order to make this delivery, if that's not relayed to the driver, they get there and there's issues, or they get to the delivery and there's issues. And I had some information that they should have had and didn't. That can cause a lot of frustration on everybody's end, especially the driver, if they have to sit for an extended period of time because I failed to communicate something to them. And don't get me wrong, I've forgotten or missed something before, but it's something that I really try to avoid to do. So having that open communication. And I mean, the drivers are the whole reason that we're here, right? I mean, without them, we wouldn't be moving freight. we wouldn't totally. Have a trucking company. So just making sure that they are, you know, as happy as I can help them be, you know. So
with any and every question that comes up. And
being available as much as possible.
That is an important thing, that you do build that relationship, to know that someone's caring for you and watching out for you on the road and making sure that you're getting enough home time and all that stuff. So, yeah, it makes sense.
One thing so I've had several driver managers. They've all been good. Anthony was really good. He was like working with a brother or cousin, you know, had a good rapport. And Chris was really good as well. But whenever you hear that you're going to get a new driver manager, you're like, oh, no. And so, you know, Kylie comes along and I'm thinking, okay, she's a girl. She probably didn't know anything about her much about trucks, you know. And then I'm thinking, she's young. She probably doesn't know much about the trucking industry, which I didn't know much about you know. But Kylie's been like a seasoned professional from day one.
Yeah.
It's never been an issue, and so it's been a great relationship.
Thanks, Roger.
But I think also, you know, I have a job to do, and if I do that job properly, then there shouldn't be, you know, there shouldn't be a problem, you know. I mean, and I don't ever remember not having the information that I needed, you know. So it's been really good, and in fact, sometimes Kylie has to have the mic shut off. I mean, because sometimes what I need is, even though I know what I need to do, I just need to talk about it, you know, which is probably wasting her time. But for me, it's the hamster wheel. If I don't talk about it with somebody, then it just keeps going around in my head. That's why I got to call and say, hey, Kylie, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do or what, you know. And,
sometimes just having a sounding board is really helpful.
Saying things out loud.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
you brought up a good point on Kylie in the trucking industry. How did you end up in the trucking industry?
I can credit that to Mr. Matt Gordon.
Really?
Yeah. I worked with Matt at Denver Mattress or
okay.
Furniture Row.
Sure.
It's actually how I met my husband as well.
Wow.
I was looking for something else. Being out of the collection mm-hmm. industry, I just needed something more mm-hmm. positive environment type
sure.
of thing. And Matt told me about this place, and here I am.
And you were doing logistics at Furniture Row?
No, I was sales.
Nice.
Yeah. So
awesome.
I was not very good at it. so I wanted out of that too.
Okay.
But yeah, he referred me and I came on. And yeah, you were right. I did not know much about the industry or trucks at all. My dad's been a truck driver my whole life. But
really?
Yeah. He did over the road for a really long time and then joined the military and did,
wow.
he drove trucks out there mm-hmm. and then taught
yeah.
Other people how to drive the Army trucks.
Hmm.
And now he lives down in Texas
yeah.
and he drives a pretty kind of like a dedicated route.
Sure.
Does
he work for another company?
Yeah. I Lone Star Trucking,
yeah.
I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So he actually called me recently and said, hey,
yeah.
I just saw one of your Newsbum drivers out here. So
that's
he
cool.
told me where, and I looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, it's one of Lindsay's dedicated drivers.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But
huh.
But yeah, I knew nothing about it beforehand. It's not like I talked to my dad much about it.
Yeah.
But now it's cool because we kind of have that
sure.
middle
rapport.
Ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can talk about trucking and tandems and
yeah.
you know your hours of service
yeah
it's pretty
it's fun
cool. yeah.
build that relationship and
mm-hmm.
yeah that's awesome. So Matt Gordon
yeah
was the guy that brought you over.
Sure did. Yeah,
that's cool.
And
yeah.
did you find it interesting that we hauled to Denver Mattress?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah. yeah, and that there were so many people that work here that had also been at Denver Mattress.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's cool. Who's the other person? That's
so Tyler Thompson,
oh, right.
Brian Nearcorn,
yeah,
and then Matt Gordon. I think that's all of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So if I can, you know,
yeah.
add that Kylie knows more about when I'm going to be somewhere than I do. I mean, there's just she's got it down, and there's times when. You know, when I figure out I'm going to be there and she figures out I'm going to be there, she's usually closer to the right. You know, so she, yeah, she does very well.
Thank you.
Good.
I try.
Yeah. So some of these elements we talked about, bringing accurate information, things change in trucking. They change pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you stay up to date on that? Do you phone call right away? Messages.
If I called every time something changed, I would never be off of
yeah.
the phone.
Yeah.
So if it's an immediate need, mm-hmm. like we just split your load and you're about to pass the drop yard or,
mm-hmm.
You know, something like that, I'll definitely call. If it's mm-hmm. something that can be sent in a message, and I know that the driver reads messages, there's some that don't look at them, so
mm-hmm.
I have to make that phone call. But
yeah.
Just kind of knowing that, like, I know Roger and I communicate through messages quite often, so
mm-hmm.
if I send him a message, he'll read it and he'll know what's going on.
Mm.
But some drivers, like I said, don't read them at all. So
yeah.
if I don't call them, I know that they're not going to know what's
mm-hmm.
going on. So
yeah.
just making sure you kind of understand which driver you're interacting with
mm-hmm.
and what the best way to do so is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many drivers do you have?
Right now, I think I'm at 35, I want to say. I just lost
yeah.
a couple, but
yeah.
But yeah, I'm getting three more on Monday, so I'll be at 39.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess my math was way off there, but, but yeah.
That's quite a few.
Yeah.
Quite a few
yeah.
people. And having a positive mindset is really good too.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, we talked about focusing on the things that we can do versus the things we can't do.
Correct.
And
yeah.
I think that's an important thing too from the driver aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me also being a business owner, I think about from top to bottom. I'm not just thinking about, you know, so if I do something that I know
yeah.
is going to affect them, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to let them know because,
yeah.
you know, I'm thinking of the whole picture, you
mm-hmm.
know, not just me.
Yeah.
And I think that helps. And then I try to be either early or on time. I don't take more than a 10-hour break unless it's, you know, unless mm-hmm. the load is off. And I take, the only time I stop during the day is for either a bathroom break or the required 30-minute break or mm-hmm. fuel. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I'm going. And I think being consistent like that makes it easier for those guys to say, okay, we know Roger's going to be here at this time because he's not going to be stopping, and he goes, and you know. Mm-hmm. So I try to be consistent to make it easier for them.
And yeah. It definitely does.
And then if I have a favor, or not a favor, but if I'm like, okay,
a request.
You know, a request, I need, they're going to say, you know what, he's pretty consistent, you know, we're going to help him out, you know, if he needs to get home or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be good about.
Being a consistent person helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, some utilizing your cycle hours. And I know Roger specifically. I'm like, oh, yeah, he can do that. Or I can count on him to get there on time. And, you know, he won't mess around. So that definitely makes it easier to plan stuff.
Yeah. And we talked about as you get older, you're a little bit more stable. The small things don't annoy you as much.
Sweat. Yeah.
Don't sweat the small things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have any pet peeves still, things that, and as a driver that would be like, oh, I really don't like when this happens? And not saying that you're doing a bad job, but just thinking like, what are those things that would cause you to?
I'll say two things. And one has nothing to do with Nussbaum, but, okay, Friday, for those of us that are home on the weekends, mm-hmm. Friday is always, you're always looking at what your path is to get home, how soon you're getting home.
Yeah.
And when you have a good path, and then they pull that load and change it, not that it's a worse load or anything, it's just that you've already thought, okay, I'm going to be home at this time, then you can start planning your weekend.
Yeah.
And if that changes, it's like,
and especially on Fridays, everything changes.
And everything changes. Right. Exactly. Everything changes on Friday. And that's, I understand, that's just part of it. These guys wouldn't do that intentionally. There's a reason for it. They wouldn't say, well, let's ruffle Roger's feathers today. They wouldn't do that, you know.
Coming back to the same reason, they're for my good. Mm-hmm. Like, both ways. So like, you know, the driver's looking out for the company, and you're looking out for the company. Everyone's trying to work together, but it is good to be aware of that. That's something that is very annoying when that happens, if you're planning what's going on and then it changes and you've already had plans.
It's frustrating, you know, but it is what it is.
So take it in stride.
Yes. So this is just kind of how I feel about these guys and people here. Is there was one Friday, Denver Row in Bloomington, that's where I was delivering, and I was 2 hours ahead of schedule.
Okay.
And so I got there, they got me unloaded, and I had to come here, pick up a load, and then I was going home, so I was going to be home early. I got here, and Kylie calls and says, Roger, that trailer that you're going to take is in the shop, and it won't be ready for a couple of hours. I'm like, gee. Well, so what I did was, I'm like, okay. So then I came in here, and I did my rounds, my social rounds. I talked to Kylie, talked to Phil, and talked to Bill Wettstein and a couple of other people. And I spent 30 minutes doing that. And after that, those interactions, which I love, it was okay. I could have got home at 10 o'clock that night. It wouldn't have mattered, because that social interaction with people we work with and the people I enjoy talking to. Maya was another one I chatted with for a while. It just made everything okay, you know. But the fact that I was going home and got delayed. Well, and then after I talked to everybody for 30 minutes, I went over to the shop. The trailer was ready to go, and I was on my way, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But one pet peeve, if I can make it short. Trucker trash.
Okay.
Everywhere truckers park, there's trash.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Because a lot of times, whether it's on ramps or, you know, rest stops or whatever, there's always proper places to put your trash, and the places are always trashed. You know, people just not taking care of put in their trash. That's probably my biggest pet peeve, or it's something that annoys me a lot when I'm out there on the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that can be properly taken care of, and it's not just...
Yeah, it's a simple fix.
Exactly.
People don't do it.
Yeah.
It's a mindset, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Yeah.
But...
And so from your perspective, what would be a pet peeve that you might have, something that would be irritating or something that if you're not in the right mindset could cause you to spiral or...
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to echo Roger a little bit with the amount of things that change just constantly, but that's never going to change. Everything's, you know, up in the air until it's picked up and delivered and done. But I think one of the biggest things that I would say is a pet peeve of mine is just the, and I don't mean this to sound bad, but just the lack of knowledge about how much goes into the operation side of things. Because, yeah, it's easy to be on the road and they're doing this to me. You know, why did they pull that load off? Or now I have to sit for 3 hours because this load's not going to be ready in time. But what they don't see is the backside of things. And one of the great things about the Cert Red program is that you can come in and do a job shadow. And sometimes that's pretty eye-opening for the driver. It's only about an hour or two long. So clearly there's a lot more that goes into it than just that hour. Yeah. But, you know, from booking the load to getting it built to then, oh, maybe the broker canceled the load or we're working on a spot bid that's going to be more profitable for us, but you have to wait a little bit longer on it. So just a lot of that extra stuff that goes into it and not seeing all of that backside of things. And then the driver gets frustrated because all they know is, well, I had a load and it was pulled off of me and now what am I doing? So, the pet peeve of the driver just not understanding that, and it's not necessarily any fault of their own, but it's just there's a lot more, and it can almost feel like in the driver's mind they think, well, those people in the office are just sitting in their chairs and twiddling their thumbs, you know, where's my
this
load?
One will be interesting, let's switch things up, it's getting a little too boring over here.
We're just moving pieces around because we can, and that's really not what goes into it.
So, and I think a lot of the problems and the conflict is on both sides is not understanding what the other person is going through. And that's true for all parts of life, I think.
Correct.
With, you know, my job with my coworkers, if I'm getting mad about something, I'm not understanding maybe what they're going through or why they made the decision they made. So having that shared understanding can really help.
I think that's why it's a good thing to come in here and talk to people because, I mean, I know a lot of people in here and I know that they wouldn't intentionally pull a load off just to say, let's get Roger today, you know? And I think also for me, as far as having run a business, again, I look at everything. I don't just look at my little part here, you know? And and I understand that they wouldn't, they're doing it for a reason. They wouldn't just do it to, you know, upset your, you know? So
The heart behind it is good. And I think that's a thing you can come back to with any relationship you have is this person has a good heart for me. Like if you get to know them enough, then you really find out that this person is just wanting the best. And you can always come back to that or even point that out in a conversation. Hey, I know we both want the best in this outcome. And I know, just pointing that out can help a lot coming back together.
And plus we're a team. I mean, we're all working for the same goal, you know?
And so I had a question here. How do you build that trust? Are there things that you do that help build trust with each other? You mentioned going visiting people, talking to people helps a lot.
The conversation. I mean, I've gotten to know Kylie just through conversations, and most of the time it's business. Sometimes it's just chuckling about something that's off kilter or whatever, you know. I mean, the more you talk, the more you build that relationship, and you know. Plus, when I come through, I'll chat with her, and
excellent.
And again, I know they're not going to throw me under the bus, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, same, really. Of course, you've got some drivers who only call if there's an issue and you hear from them once a month. So that's a little bit harder to build those relationships with that driver. But but when you can, you know, if I notice it's their birthday or anniversary, try to point that out. And, you know, saying, you know, have a good weekend, you know, how was your weekend, stuff like that. Just trying to gain that little bit of extra personal touch.
And plus it's genuine. She doesn't just say that. I mean, she really means it. Have a nice weekend, you know, and that goes a long way for building a relationship, you know.
Yeah.
And when things get difficult on the road, like if we do have to pull off a load and it throws off Roger's whole weekend plan or something like that, you know, just making sure that I empathize with that. I mean, I'm not out on the road with you. I don't know, you know, what it's like to not be home all week, but I can understand that it is incredibly frustrating, you know, to have your whole plans kind of thrown off, and it's not an ideal situation. Just making sure I let them know that I get it.
And there are times, and I could talk about one specific, but there are times when I will send something to Kylie, let her know my frustration, but I also make sure that I let her know I'm not mad at her. It's not her fault. It's just that
the situation,
whether it's a broker thing or whatever, it's like, oh, this is frustrating, though. Just a vent. But then again, I make sure she knows I'm not directing it towards her because it's not her fault. You know, it's just the industry. You
and
know?
I think it's important to vent those frustrations.
Don't hide them.
I mean, even if it is something that you're frustrated with myself about, like if you keep that in, that doesn't ever help anything.
It's a good point. Parting advice, and then we'll wrap this episode up. What advice would you give to someone that's struggling with their relationship with their dispatch driver manager?
I guess I'd say pretty much the same thing I just did. Yeah, I mean, if you've got frustrations with your DM or operations, I mean, to a degree, and make sure you're doing it respectfully, of course, but just making sure you're voicing those, and, you know, hey, I wish this situation would have been handled a little differently. Maybe we can do that moving forward, type of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Roger.
Being old school, I think it's important if you're in the area to come in and have that, because you both know how sometimes you can get a text and you don't know what the emphasis is there, whether it's
no body language.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can misinterpret it.
For sure.
You know, so I think it's good to come in and do a person to person if you can. And again, understand that there's more, you're just a small part of the whole process. You know, you have to understand that. So
good. Good advice. Definitely taking that. This last little part of the episode, we like to play a game called Hot Takes. This is just a fun way to wrap up the episode and have a little bit of a lighthearted conversation. And we will, I'll say a statement. You'll either agree or disagree with it. And you can tell me why. So the first one is a $5 cup of coffee worth it?
Yes.
Good coffee. Good coffee.
Yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, from a gas station, no.
No.
But good coffee, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get what you pay for.
Right?
If that's all that's available, yes.
Okay.
I mean, I very seldom buy coffee.
Yeah.
Because the truck stops is terrible. I make my own with my coffee maker, so I don't know what that's costing me. But yeah, if you're on the road and that's all that's available, it's definitely worth it. You know.
Yeah. Good. So you have a coffee maker you bring with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Keurig and.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool. That was the first thing everybody puts microwaves in. First thing for me was coffee.
Coffee.
If I have a cup of coffee in the morning, I'm ready to take on the world.
Sure. Yeah,
I'm
ready to roll.
Yeah.
And do you have a coffee shop that you go to?
No. My husband bought a very fancy Ninja coffee machine that you can froth your milk with.
Whoa.
So we usually do that. Sometimes I'll splurge on the weekend.
Sure.
Obviously, I have to limit my caffeine intake at the moment.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Is pizza without cheese still a pizza? Tough question.
I'd say no.
No pizza.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree. That's a main ingredient.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Because then it's just bread with toppings.
Right.
Kind of an abomination.
More like a sandwich, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's just a random one. But you could make the argument that it might be still like a calzone. You just kind of fold it.
There's cheese in those, too.
Yeah, there's still cheese in those. So is breakfast for dinner a good idea?
Always.
Always?
Yeah.
I'll agree.
Yeah. Biscuits
agree
and
on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever day of the week, you can always do breakfast for dinner.
Mm-hmm. I could.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it kind of sounds good right now, actually.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is the end of our episode. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners. And so you'll be heading to Borneo pretty soon.
Actually, a week from today.
Week from today.
Yep.
Very exciting. So look out for any pictures. Look out for his book. That's coming. Super exciting. Any idea on what you're going to call it?
Out There. If I can get away with that title, it's going to be Out There.
Out There.
Yep.
I like that. Yeah. Out There.
Yeah.
By Roger Kyler. Thank you to Daniel and all our listeners out there, too. Until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi, everyone. This is CJ from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit NussbaumJobs.com. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.